My name is Kevin Murphy, and this is the Mission Innovation Podcast.
I said, do you have enough food in your food bank? And he said, no. My second question was, if we captured all the food that was thrown out, could we end hunger? And his answer was yes. And I looked at him and I said, then why are we doing it?
Almost one in seven Americans, 12.9%, struggle with hunger, facing times when there's not enough money to buy food. That's more than 41 million people. On any given day, one in 10 people in Orange County, California, or about 315,000 people, including one in six children, are at risk for food insecurity. That is, they lack the reliable access to a steady supply of food. Eric Handler is a pediatrician with over 30 years of experience, who also happens to be the public health officer of Orange County, California, the sixth largest county in the country. Eric has initiated campaigns on hunger and mental health in innovative ways that are not typical of a public health officer. His innovative work has spread to other regions of the country. I spoke with Eric about his mission innovation called Waste Not OC, the collaborative campaign to end hunger in Orange County, California. Eric, explain to me how the program Waste Not OC started.
I was in Sacramento in 2012, and I was eating breakfast and bumped into the executive director for the Orange County Food Bank. And we had an hour conversation. We had met previously, but never really sat down and had a detailed conversation. At the end of our conversation, I asked him two questions. I said, do you have enough food in your food bank? And he said, no. My second question was, if we captured all the food that was thrown out, could we end hunger? And his answer was yes. And I looked at him and I said, then why are we doing it? So I went back to my boss and I said, I want to end hunger. And he said, good for you. Good luck. I said, I want to end hunger in Orange County. And I brought a group of people together in November of 2012, representing the restaurant industry, the food industry, the county, environmental health. And there were probably about 30 people in the room. And I said, why aren't you donating? And they gave two answers. One was liability. And the second thing was the public health department won't allow us. And I was just stunned. I was the public health department. And I never told anybody they couldn't donate food. So from that meeting, we developed a core group of dedicated, passionate people to address ending hunger and food insecurity in Orange County. In Orange County, one out of six children are food insecure, and we have over 300,000 people in Orange County that are facing food insecurity. And if you want to see what your county's meal gap is, you can go to Feeding America website and put in map the meal gap, you put in your county, and it'll give you all the data for regarding food insecurity in your county.
Now, Eric, you're using a specific term called food insecurity. Can you define that for me? What does that term mean?
It's a polite way of saying that they're hungry. It's a politically correct word to say that people need food. And that's my definition. If you need food, you need food. And so, however you want to define it, food insecurity seems to be the best way to describe it.
Okay, so you had these beginning conversations. What was the next step?
We brought a group of people representing the food industry to come together to discuss the issue and why restaurants and grocery stores were not donating food. And from that came the core group of Waste Not OC Coalition members.
How did you know who to bring together?
I want to share that for the first 6 months in this job, I basically met as many community partners as possible. And what I find most interesting in other my colleagues and students is when they meet with community partners, they have an agenda and they always have an ask. When I met them on their territory. Never asked them for anything, and asked, what could I do for you? And tell me about your program and what you do. That is an extremely valuable perspective to maintain in this job and any job. And I knew that somewhere along the line, meeting that individual or that organization would benefit another organization or person that I met. So I knew that the pieces of the puzzle will eventually come together. And so for me, here at getting the pulse of the community was extremely important.
So you reached out for a lot of input.
I just came up with the 30,000 foot question. And then I went to people to say, who needs to be at the table to help me address this issue? So I went to our environmental health specialists, who have a group of people from the food industry meet on a regular basis. And I was told, invite this person, and this person. Then I went to our other county agencies and said, who needs to be at the table? And so I didn't have any predetermined thoughts. All the driving force for me was, there's an incredible waste of food. And if we captured it, we could end hunger. So this group of people with that expertise, I wasn't trained in the food industry. We're going to bring to the table experts in this field to tell us the best way to approach this problem.
And then after you brought them together, tell me the rest of the story, how things evolved from that first meeting to actually doing the work.
Again, I must stress that if this is going to be an initiative, that it requires a group of dedicated, passionate people, and I cannot say that strong enough. That is the single most important requirement. With that being said, it's also important to remember that you need to have people wanting to do this, that have the time to do it and see the vision and embracing it. So we brought the group of people together, and in my enthusiasm, I wanted to implement this countywide right away. And the coalition team member said, well, maybe you'd like to start a little bit slower. Why don't we shoot for Anaheim and Orange and have our mistakes happen there and then start putting that out countywide? Now, I must tell you that we had no funding, that we had people around the table that were just doing in-kind contribution. And the first step that we used to initiate this program was to use environmental health specialists within the county to go out to restaurants and grocery stores to inform them that the Bill Emerson Good Samaritan Act protects you if you do food donations, and that no one really understood or knew that law. And once they were told that, then they started to embrace the idea about food donations because they get a tax break from it, and it's helping society, it's helping the county. So that's where we started. So the environmental health specialist champion, Mike Haller, who is in charge of the food program, developed a one-page sheet that we handed out to restaurant owners when the environmental health specialists went out to do restaurant inspections, saying, read this, we will help you achieve doing food donations if you're interested in doing it. And that had never been done before. So that's how we actually started the program. The other concern that I had was, if you think about it, people self-identify that they're food insecure. And by doing that, they go to the pantries and things like that. And what I wanted to do was identify people who were food insecure in all kinds of settings. So Children's Hospital of Orange County, every admission is screened for food insecurity. Kaiser Permanente Pediatrics is piloting a program where they're also screening their families. We have the Child Cancer Center at the University of California, Irvine, screening their cancer patients for food insecurity. And making this the standard operation for when you see a family or a patient, you ask them, are you food insecure? And if they answer yes, the other program that we initiated initially by our Waste.OC coalition was the development of a Google map showing all the food pantries in Orange County.
For healthcare professionals who would want to see a screening tool, what would you recommend?
The American Academy of Pediatrics came out with a toolkit addressing food insecurity for pediatricians. It tells them how to screen patients for food insecurity, how to address the topic in a sensitive manner, make the appropriate interventions, and advocate for greater food security and improve overall health of children and their families. That came out last year. So the two questions on the screening tool are, within the past 12 months, we worried whether our food would run out before we got money to buy more. And within the past 12 months, the food we bought just didn't last and we didn't have money to get more.
Within our communities, it's very easy for community members to be numb to issues they might be experiencing, seeing in the community around them, whether that's homelessness, whether that's hunger. What do you think enabled you to not only accept the fact of this reality occurring within Orange County and then attempt to respond to it, but not only you drew together a number of people who were willing to kind of face this issue. What do you think enabled that?
I think the fact that, first of all, I was the public health and public health officer of 3 million people in Orange County. Second of all, I'm very passionate about issues, and I can bring people to the table, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to stay at the table. And I'm not a fan of bureaucracy, but I can tell you something, that this has been the most political issue I've ever had to deal with in my entire career. And it took a lot of time and energy to bring this to a successful conclusion. And Kevin, I want to share an interesting story with you, if you don't mind. This initiative for me, and when I present about it, has always been magical because of all the magical things that happen from presentations and meeting people. So I'll give you a perfect example of one of the things that happened. I met with a University of California in Irvine MPH graduate student. His name is Shaw Steiner, and he came into my office and he said, "Dr. Handler, I have to do 240 hours of community involvement and I'd like to do a project with you." And I said, "Shaw, I've got the perfect project for you." And he goes, "What is it?" And I said to him that I want to end hunger. To say he had a stone face was mildly a description. He just looked at me with a blank look. And I go, "Shaw, what's going on here?" And he says, "I only have 240 hours. How am I going to end hunger?" And we were very fortunate that he decided to do the project. And the reason I'm telling this story is he called me into his cubicle and he said, "Look what I did." And I looked and he developed a Google map of all the food pantries, providing information about their hours of operation, phone number, location, et cetera. And he did this on his own. And what was so remarkable about that is that was the final piece of the puzzle. Because as a pediatrician, I can ask all my patients if they're facing food insecurity. And if they say yes, I have no recourse to provide them food. I can give them money out of my pocket, but that's about it. And here is a MPH graduate student who developed this Google map so that anybody can put in their zip code and they will find the nearest pantries to their location. That's truly remarkable, and it was done by a student.
And so in summary, with this program, it sounds like you have a three-pronged approach. You're trying to get restaurants to donate food, you're getting physicians to screen, and you have a place to refer them to. Am I summarizing that correctly?
That's correct, but it's a lot more involved than that. Part of the reason being that people will donate to food pantries, and we found that when they do that, food pantries do not turn them down. The food pantry may take the food and then throw it out. So what you're doing is just shifting the waste. And part of our program also consists of what we call food recovery kitchens, so that they will repurpose the food and then provide that repurposed food back to the pantry so that they can use it instead of throwing it out. In addition, the food recovery kitchens are being used as a training ground for troubled youth, veterans, and other individuals to help them learn a skill so that they can find themselves a job better than minimum wage.
As you started this initiative, what kinds of pushback might have come to you? I'm just assuming you might have gotten a comment or two that why would a public health officer be involved in this issue? Why focus your time here? Was that a comment that was heard at all? And was there any other types of pushback that, looking back, came your way?
You actually hit it right on the head. That's exactly what happened. People were saying, you know, why are you getting involved in this? How is this a public health issue? You have time to put this much energy into it? But talking about the politics of the situation, there's a slide that I showed during my presentation that sort of summarizes the experience that I had. And it goes like this. The biggest threat to innovation is internal politics and an organizational culture which doesn't accept failure and or doesn't accept ideas from outside and or cannot change.
So in the face of that kind of challenge or pushback, what were the things that helped you to persevere over time and to continue towards the success of this program?
Persistence. It's very interesting. Initially, when we started this program, the head of environmental health told me that environmental health specialists should not be encouraging food donations or talking to restaurant owners about it. He said, environmental health is regulatory and we have to stay in our lane. And imagine what it would be like if we saw an operator, a restaurant operator, and said, are you donating food? Now, this operator may say, if I answer yes, will they give me a good mark? And if I answer no, will they give me a bad mark? And so the other aspect to setting up any program to be successful is to find internal champions. And I found an internal champion in environmental health that got us to the point where we are now. And that individual took a lot of pressure, and I took a lot of pressure because the institution does everything it can to resist innovation.
I'm assuming as well that you would have experienced different views in the community towards hunger, towards poverty. There may have been types of blame that you might have experienced that community members might have thought that, you know, people who are hungry may have brought this upon themselves. What were the experiences or the stories or the perspectives that you saw that community members had towards poverty or towards hunger as you went on this journey?
Well, I can share a couple of experiences. One, I was at a party of ex-agency directors for Orange County, and I was telling them about the Waste Not OC Coalition Initiative. And the numbers that one out of six children are food insecure and over 300,000 individuals are facing food insecurity in the county. And the response of one of the individuals at the party basically said, I don't believe the figures. How do you know those are accurate? What if they're not? And I basically looked at him and I said, the only reason you're making that statement, and if you truly believe what you just said, then you don't have to do anything about it. Well, needless to say, I never got invited to another party at that location.
Any other stories that you have that kind of demonstrate different kinds of perspectives? I'm sure just as you got pushback, I'm sure you got energy from, as you say, champions or people in the community who just were drawn to the importance of this work.
Well, let me just say that the community really was drawn to this work from the very get-go. And there was not a lot of pushback. But there were examples, for example, trying to start a food pantry at the University of California in Irvine. It took a year, but it finally occurred when there was a change in the chancellor, who realized that this was something that was truly important, and they established what was called the SOAR pantry, and is now a student-run pantry to help food insecure college students. The other interesting thing is when people hear that, for example, the University of California Irvine pantry was starting to operate, the comment that you hear frequently is, what if they don't need the food? What if people just come and take advantage of it? And my response is, who would want to be identified waiting in line to get food as being food insecure? Who wants to have that stigma? And if they want to stay in line and have the food because they don't need it, then so be it. But the majority of people on the line will need it. It's using common sense to counter those kinds of arguments.
And with the issue of stigma, do you feel that probably continues? Has it gotten better with respect to people utilizing pantries, food banks?
Yes, I think they've always been using it. The interesting thing about the stigma was that when I was talking with Children's Hospital of Orange County about incorporating the two questions into their routine admissions, the comment was, that's pretty invasive. Somebody stood up in the meeting and said, those are invasive questions. And I looked at this nurse and I said, so if a teenager comes to your clinic, for example, and you ask them, are you sexually active? Do you have multiple partners? Are you injecting or smoking any drugs? I said, those are invasive questions. Not asking two questions as to whether or not you're suffering from food insecurity. She sat down. And after a year of trying to make that happen at Children's Hospital, again, an eternal champion said to me at lunch, I can make it happen in 3 to 4 weeks. And sure enough, that individual did it. Because there's so much resistance, it's not that they didn't want to do it. They have other priorities that they have to deal with. And so finding an internal champion that can make things happen in the direction that you want is absolutely critical to success.
You know, in Orange County, on any given day, 1 in 10 people, or about 315,000 people, including 1 in 6 children, are at risk of food security. In Denver, or in Colorado, the state where I live, it's 1 in 10 Coloradans and 1 in 7 Colorado children. And nationally, almost 1 in 7 Americans struggle with hunger, and more than 1 in 6 children don't have consistent access to nutritious food. What has the spread of your program looked like? It's had success in Orange County. Has it spread to other areas, places, colleagues?
So, first of all, last year we recovered almost 15 million pounds of food that would have been thrown out. And that was distributed to pantries and other locations. So we're very proud of that. Just before talking to you, we had a conference call with the state of Mississippi who wants to replicate waste.oc. The proudest things for me right now is El Dorado County in California is starting Waste Not El Dorado County. Ventura County is starting Waste Not VC. San Bernardino and Riverside are also extremely interested in starting a program similar to what we're doing. So it is clear that people see the advantage of doing this. And there are several legislative bills that are coming down that will require you to reduce the amount of waste into the landfill. And if you don't comply, you will be penalized. So there's now an impetus for them to look at decreasing their landfill because of the penalties. Let me share another quote that I present during my presentation. It says, the first step toward success is taken when you refuse to be a captive of the environment in which you first find yourself. And that was Mark Kane who made that quote. And so let me give you a perfect example. The American Academy of Pediatrics every year has a meeting to decide what their top 10 priorities are going to be for the following year. And I said to myself, they get several hundred resolutions. And I go, what the heck? I'm going to submit a resolution that will state that we should all be asking the two questions of food insecurity. Now, who am I to say, okay, this can happen? I mean, if you think about it, who am I to end hunger, and who am I to say that the American Academy of Pediatrics would endorse such a thing? Well, much to my surprise, it made the top 10 resolutions for the following year. And so that's was led to the pediatric toolkit, helping physicians ask the question and assessing food insecurity in their families. And I think if you ask what sets me apart from others, is I really refuse to be captive of my environment and my four walls. And if you don't stick your toe in the ocean to see what kind of ripple effect you will have, you'll never know. So that's one example. The other is we came up with the idea of using environmental health specialists to encourage restaurants to do food donations. And one day I saw an article in the LA Times saying that Starbucks is now nationally going to be donating food. And this LA writer, David Lazarus, said, I wish more was being done in Southern California. And I said, oh, what the heck? I don't know this reporter. I might as well just give him a call. And I called him out of the blue and I said, listen, David, you don't know me. I'm the health officer for Orange County, but we have a program that is ending hunger in Orange County. I gave him the website, wastenotoc.org. And I said, if you have any questions or you want to learn more, here's my cell phone number. 2 days later, he gave me a call. And we had I had an interview for about 30 minutes. And in his article the following day, he wrote, the fact that environmental health specialists are providing information for food donation is absolute genius. And that's how we started that program. In addition to working with restaurants, the executive director for Waste.OC Coalition is actually a restaurant owner. Mike Liarakis is the owner of Catella Grill. He knows how to speak the language. He knows what they are facing economically. And so that has greatly enhanced our ability to get food donations and partners on board.
What was key for restaurants to join?
One of the key first steps that we initiated was to first do a determination as what was preventing restaurants and grocery stores from donating. And from a meeting, it came out that liability and the public health department would not allow us to do it. So what better way to get the word out is to have the Department of Public Health, through our environmental health specialists that do restaurant inspections, go out to the restaurants and grocery stores during the inspection and provide them information about food donation and the Bill Emerson Good Samaritan Act. We killed two birds with one stone, and that took away any excuse a restaurant or grocery store may have in regards to not wanting to donate.
And over time, how quickly did the increase of donations from restaurants or grocery stores increase once you started that kind of an initiative?
We had started this initiative in two piloted areas, Orange, the city of Orange, and Anaheim. So it was a slow buildup, and to the point of the highest mark that we've ever had was last year with 15 million pounds. So it was gradual, but yet it was consistent, the amount of food that was being donated. And again, there are a lot of logistical issues involved in that. And we wanted to make sure that if we did make mistakes, it would be on a small level. We were fully aware that food safety is absolutely incredible. And brand is so important to the industry, protection of their brand. So if we made one mistake, it could potentially have been fatal to our initiative and we would have died.
Was there a time that you thought that the initiative may not go forward due to whatever dynamic or issue that arose?
There was one instance where I did think that we were at a critical area. And fortunate for me, because of the relationships that I had with the Board of Supervisors, they intervened and we overcame that hurdle.
Have you ever had, in the time that you've been involved with this initiative, kind of an experience of disappointment that led you into deeper reflection on the work that you were doing?
I never lost sight of the mission. So sure, there was frustration and sure, there were a lot of hurdles to go through, but I never lost sight of what the prize was. And if you have a group of people around you that are supportive and believe in what you believe in, then those kinds of things are so small compared to what you're trying to achieve. So there really wasn't any, there were many multiple hurdles that needed to be overcome. And to say that I was frustrated at times is an understatement. But the fact that we were going to provide 12 million meals last year minimizes that frustration too, where it doesn't really matter.
In healthcare, we're experiencing great disruption right now. Health systems are consolidating with a greater focus on population health. What do you feel large health systems need to pay attention to or put in place with regard to food insecurity?
Well, let's talk about population health and the healthcare system. When you're focusing on social determinants, which I think are absolutely critical, and that includes homeless, it includes hunger, it includes poverty, those are the things that you really need to focus on if you're going to improve population health. There are some that have the mindset that if you do not demonstrate success and return on investment in 3 to 5 years, then the initiative is not worthwhile. And in public health and population health, those type of changes take 10 years or more to happen.
Have a different conversation, and you've certainly introduced through this program different conversations in the community. You sometimes need to ask different questions. And from your experience, what are the questions that health leaders, maybe public health leaders, need to be asking now regarding our health systems and the systems in place and the needs for population health? Are we asking the right questions? And if not, what are some of the questions we should be asking?
Well, again, let me provide an example. I went to an innovation summit and a pediatric endocrinologist was talking about the incredible successes he was having with a new monitoring system for diabetics, children with diabetes, where they can check to see how well they're doing and regulate their blood sugar with insulin. And it was pretty remarkable, to say the least. After his presentation, I walked up to him and I said, "Do you know if your patients have enough food?" He says, "Well, we talk about diet to make sure that they have enough carbohydrates and other necessities." But I said, "You don't know if your children or your families are food insecure, do you?" He goes, "No." And I said, "Wouldn't that impact how successful your diabetic program would be?" And he said, "Yes." But we don't think that way. We don't think about the social determinants' impact on chronic disease. And we need a paradigm shift to say, okay, what can we do to change those to be allow us to be successful in the things that we want to accomplish? So it gave that physician food for thought. I also had the same conversation with the head of the Cancer Institute at UCI. I said, "Do you think your elderly population that is facing has food insecurity while you're giving them cancer treatment? And if they are, does that make them less able to respond to chemotherapy and radiation therapy?" And he said, "Absolutely." And the next thing I know, the following week, he was asking them questions about food insecurity. So those are the shifts that I think are important that we need to focus on.
Eric, who have been your mentors? And what was perhaps one of the more powerful experiences that you've had of being mentored that have helped your leadership?
I've had several mentors in my different stages of my career. But I think the one that sticks out the most is I was doing a fellowship at Rancho Los Amigos Hospital and in pediatric rehab. And we had a 16-year-old spinal cord injury patient who was suffering from immobilization hypercalcemia. And this was in the 80s. And I decided to just do some research and see, learn more about what that's all about. And I came across a drug called Didronil that was a way of decreasing the calcification in the blood so that you don't have formation of stone, kidney stones, and other problems and high blood pressure. And Dr. Komar, who was working at the facility in adult urology, helped champion the things that I wanted to do and got the resistant pediatric leadership to say, okay, we'll give it a try. And sure enough, we were flying by the seat of our pants, but it worked. The thing that sticks out most for me is that I gave grand rounds in Rancho Los Amigos Hospital on Didronil. And I worked so hard on that. And I made the presentation and Dr. Komar came up to me and he said, I'm very proud of you and what you've been able to succeed and do. And it was because of his mentorship that I was able to accomplish that. And I'll forever be indebted to him.
Today, our conversation with Dr. Eric Handler and his work has offered us another picture of mission innovation. Thanks, everyone. I'm Kevin Murphy, and this is the Mission Innovation Podcast.